It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
The pitfall there is not properly identifying that you have that asset. When you put down in your bankruptcy all the things that you own, and that includes lawsuits... If you fail to identify the fact that that is something that you own and that it is of value, not only do you lose the right to pursue that claim, you essentially give that right to the trustee, period. Not only do you lose that right, you also are admitting in a court pleading that your claim of whatever sort, whether it is a personal injury claim, a wrongful death claim, a Social Security claim, whatever it is, you're admitting that you are not entitled to any money. That's called a judicial admission.
Private attorney and friend of the show, Jason Crumbine at Crumbine Consumer Legal Services, reveals the many pitfalls of filing a do-it-yourself bankruptcy in the first part of a two-part interview. And during this week's News You Can Use, we discuss how some Social Security and SSI recipients have been cut off from needed benefits because of difficulty activating Direct Express cards. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 155, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Housing continues to be a drag on our economy. To strengthen our housing market, we must prevent unnecessary foreclosures. Vacant homes are devastating neighborhoods and housing values all over Virginia. Every unnecessary foreclosure further depresses home prices, adds to the housing inventory, and destabilizes a family. Currently, homeowners are being foreclosed upon even though they can pay to stay in their home. This practice of dual tracking is very common, where lenders continue to pursue foreclosure even though the homeowner is in the middle of a loan modification to have their monthly payment reduced. In a recent survey, 87% of housing counselors in Virginia said their clients were foreclosed upon even though they were in the middle of a loan modification process. This means that homeowners who can pay to stay in their homes and are in the middle of the loan modification process can be foreclosed upon. House Bills 822 and 821, introduced by Delegate Bob Marshall, a conservative Republican, would prevent foreclosures while homeowners are in the middle of a loan modification process, and also create a civil action for people wrongfully foreclosed upon, allowing them to recoup damages and attorney's fees. In other news, the Social Security Administration is shifting away from paper checks in favor of electronic benefits. With a few exceptions, people receiving Social Security or SSI benefits soon will be required to get their benefits either via direct deposit or on a prepaid debit card called a Direct Express card. New recipients as of May 1, 2011, now are required to choose direct deposit or Direct Express. Current recipients still getting a paper check will be required to switch by March 1, 2013. The Direct Express card has the MasterCard logo and operates like any other prepaid debit card. It can be used for free or at far lower cost than other prepaid debit cards. However, some recipients report problems activating their Direct Express cards, which can prevent them from accessing their needed benefits. Once a cardholder has tried 3 times to activate her card, she will be locked out of the system and prevented from trying again. It can be extremely difficult to get help from customer service to activate the Direct Express card. The National Consumer Law Center is working to improve customer service for the Direct Express card so that Social Security and SSI recipients are not prevented from accessing their needed benefits. For more information, go to www.usdirectexpress.com. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Blake versus Hercules. Edward Blake was suspected of being under the influence of drugs while at work in violation of his employer's policy. A drug test revealed a small amount of a derivative of marijuana in his system, and he was terminated for misconduct. The Virginia Employment Commission awarded unemployment benefits, holding that there was a lack of credible evidence to establish that he was under the influence of a drug. The Circuit Court reversed the award, holding that the termination was for cause. Upon appeal, the Court of Appeals reversed, holding that there was no evidence to refute Mr. Blake's claim that he had not personally used marijuana, but had been merely in the presence of persons smoking marijuana while away from work. He did not deliberately violate a company rule, because the rule only required that he not report to work under the influence, and that he not possess alcohol or drugs on the premises. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault. And Blake versus Hercules is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
If your finances are bad enough so you need a bankruptcy, your abilities may not be good enough to file it on your own. Here's the first part of a two-part interview with private attorney Jason Crumbine at Crumbine Consumer Legal Services about the many pitfalls of filing a do-it-yourself bankruptcy. We're here at the law offices of Crumbine Consumer Legal Services in the near west end of Henrico County, near Willow Lawn, and we are speaking with Jason Crumbine, and we will be speaking today about the pitfalls of do-it-yourself bankruptcy. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Now, I gather we have a disclaimer of sorts for our listeners. Would you care to give that right now?
Yes, I would. First, I need to say that we are a debt relief agency at Crumbine Consumer Legal Services, and that one of the services that we do provide is filing for bankruptcy for people who need those services. Now, related to that, of course, is the fact that people do have the right to file bankruptcy without a lawyer, but we don't recommend it.
So will you tell our listeners why you don't recommend it? We have a whole long list of pitfalls. So let's start with, I would call these the pre-filing pitfalls, things that people should think about before they even file a bankruptcy and maybe consider why they shouldn't file at all.
These are some of the things that I thought of to begin with. This isn't necessarily all of the reasons why it's important to think about going to a lawyer when filing a bankruptcy, but this is some of the major points. The first thing to think about is there an asset with equity? For certain circumstances, when you have a house or a car or something like that, if there's equity in it, that equity might be something that is not protectable in a Chapter 7. It might be too much to save.
Now, what do we mean by equity?
That is the retained value after the lien is paid. So, for example, the easiest one to describe that, there's two easy ones, houses and cars. If you have a house and you owe $100,000 on the house and the house is worth $150,000, there's $50,000 worth of equity. That's the value that you could get out of the house if you sold the house. By the same token, you have a car, similar situation, just smaller numbers. You owe $10,000 on the car. The car is worth $15,000. That's $5,000 worth of equity. That is important to note the difference between the two, because with a car, there are certain things that you get to think about when working on your bankruptcy. And I think it sort of segues into one of the other things that we might be talking about later, and that is exemptions. With the car, the Virginia Code has recently been updated to allow for exemptions. That is something that you can keep even though you filed for bankruptcy or even though you have been sued. The value of the exemption that you get to claim on a car in Virginia is now $6,000. So with the situation that I described with the car, car's worth $15,000. You owe $10,000 on it. There is a $6,000 exemption that you could use. That car would be protected from a Chapter 7 bankruptcy trustee who might want to sell it, that car. That's related to yet another thing, which is not claiming or not properly identifying the exemptions.
Now, you said that $6,000 worth of a car, motor vehicle, could be exempt or would be exempt under Virginia law. What's the limit for a house exemption?
That is the weird one. And the answer is either $5,000 per person or essentially unlimited.
Explain that.
In the circumstance of a house, it's a little bit different because the creditors who are joint creditors can come after the equity in the house if you are married at the time that you buy the house and the title is done correctly. If it is not done correctly or you are not married at the time that you buy the house, then a maximum amount would be $5,000 per person. But if you are married when you buy the house and if the title is done correctly and all the other paperwork is done correctly and there are no joint creditors, then the exemption amount is essentially unlimited. It is what's called tenants by the entirety. But that's one of those ones that you really want to consult with a lawyer before you go claiming that it is exempt as tenants by the entirety, because a small error, even a small error in the drafting of the deed, can blow that.
So am I correct that if it's a single debt against either a husband or a wife, they won't be able to go after that property that is titled tenants by the entireties? But if it's a debt that both of them owe, then they could? Is that correct?
That is correct. They could attach it as a lien in the judgment context, or in the context of a bankruptcy, they could force the sale. But there are some exceptions to that, and the primary exception to that one is going to be taxes. Taxes, even though it's an individual debt, could become a lien against the property, even though it is tenants by the entirety.
Now, let's assume the property is not titled tenants by the entireties and that unlimited exemption, if it's just a single debt, not a joint debt, applies. How much of a house would someone filing a bankruptcy be able to protect from their creditors?
In the context of a Chapter 7, they could protect $5,000 worth of equity. So if you have the example of $100,000 worth of loan, $150,000 house, what we described before, they would be able to protect $5,000. The Chapter 7 trustee would sell that house.
So in that case, filing a bankruptcy would probably be the worst possible thing they could do?
Not necessarily, but it needs to be something that you're thinking about in advance. Maybe that is a good solution for you. Maybe you want the trustee to sell the house and deal with that because it's, for example, a house that you could no longer afford or a house that you no longer can live in. For example, an elderly person or a person who is handicapped or something like that. It would be a good idea to be able to move out of that house. Now, there are some disadvantages to that, and that is primarily $100,000 worth of loan on $150,000 worth of house. Most likely, the mortgage payment is going to be in the, we'll say, $800 to $900 a month payment. And on a $150,000 house, getting an equivalent house for rent will be I'm going to guess something in the $1,100 to $1,200 a month. So now you've got a higher monthly living expense, but maybe that might be the kind of thing that it might be worthwhile because you can't afford to maintain the house, for example.
But let's assume you want to keep the house. Would it be correct that in that situation that you describe, where there's $50,000 of equity, filing a bankruptcy would be maybe the worst possible thing you could do if you wanted to keep the house?
Absolutely.
Well, what about situations where people are about to incur new debt? For example, medical debt. Is that a problem if you file bankruptcy?
Yes and no. The problem with knowing that you're going to incur new debt, in the medical debt, for example, where you're going to have surgery in 6 months, is that that new debt will be not discharged in your bankruptcy. You'll still owe it no matter what we do. However, it may be worthwhile to go ahead and do the bankruptcy now because it means that you can move on. Now, it all depends on what your situation is. For example, if you have health insurance, and I want to be clear, we recommend that everyone has health insurance because it will control the damage of how much it is that you end up owing. But it's not necessarily a good idea to file for bankruptcy before you incur that debt. It would be preferable to wait until you have the debt. Now, if it is a debt that you are incurring for example, buying a car, that's going to be different. It may be better. You may get better terms to file the bankruptcy first and then get that loan. But it's going to depend a lot on the specific circumstances and things like that.
Now, a lot of people, before they file bankruptcy, want to put the house in their children's name or otherwise dispose of assets. And I understand that that's a really big pitfall.
That is a really nasty problem. That could be construed as a fraudulent conveyance. It could also be potentially construed as a preference payment where you're paying one group of people rather than paying another. That is a problem on two grounds. Number one is that the transfer is undoable for, and you need to wait for it, 5 years.
Now, what do you mean by undoable?
The house becomes back in your name, and the trustee gets to sell it out from under you. It's worse than that because if the house would have been exempt, for example, the house that was tenants by the entirety, that was exempt, when you transfer it away and put it into your children's name, you have fraudulently conveyed that house, the trustee can undo it, and it's no longer exempt. And that can happen in all sorts of contexts. For example, people tend to liquidate their retirement accounts, their 401k, their state retirement, whatever. That is another circumstance that may fall into that exact situation. And what's really bad about that is that the retirement accounts, the 401ks, the 403bs, the other things like that are exempt, period, under federal law, not even under state law. That is something that not even the IRS can attach.
Well, now it's tax time now, and you mentioned people liquidating their IRAs or 401ks or 403bs. What happens if people get a large income tax refund, which happens right around this time of year, and then they go and file bankruptcy? Is that going to be a pitfall?
That is a potential pitfall, and it is a potential pitfall between approximately September, October, and roughly April 15th. In that period of time, you are entitled to a tax refund, you just haven't necessarily received it. While you are still entitled to that tax refund, that is money that the trustee could attach, and it's going to depend a lot on how big that tax refund is. For example, if we're talking about a $2,000, $3,000, maybe $4,000 tax refund, under most circumstances, that would be protectable. But if your tax refund was going to be $6,000, $8,000, $10,000, that would not be something that would be protectable under most circumstances, barring some sort of exceptional circumstance.
Now, earlier you mentioned a ban against preferential treatment. That is, right before filing a bankruptcy, paying one creditor over another. Can you explain what that pitfall is and why people need to avoid that?
In general, the circumstance that is a problem is deciding to pay one creditor because, for example, you wish to be nice to that one. For example, a family member. Paying a family member rather than paying your other bills might be a preferential payment. Possibly paying off a particular credit card because you wanted to try and keep that credit card after your bankruptcy. Now, the follow-up to that is that that usually is a failed plan anyway. Most credit card companies, at least once a year, will check your credit report in what's called an account review, and they'll look and they'll see that bankruptcy, and they will either dramatically reduce your credit line or outright close it. So that is one where it could really seriously backfire without even trying.
Now, you mentioned credit cards, and of course, some people are tempted to run up big credit card bills or get cash advances right before they file bankruptcy and then file bankruptcy. Now that they've run up these bills and gotten the goods and services or they've gotten the cash advance, what's the problem there?
The problem there is that there is a presumption that if you have taken out cash advances or bought certain items, and the definition of those certain items is sort of hard to really put your finger on, but generally it's luxury goods. If you have done that within 90 days of filing, you could be denied your discharge. And so that's one of those things that we really strongly recommend that you don't do, that you wait at least 90 days. Now, just because you wait 90 days doesn't mean that it isn't the kind of thing where somebody won't jump up and scream. But the longer you go and the lower the amount of money, the less likely it is.
Okay, so we talked about getting these cash advances or buying luxury goods with a credit card as a pitfall not to file bankruptcy. What if you expect to receive a large sum of money in the future, like an inheritance, or maybe you have filed a lawsuit for money, or you've got a disability claim that's pending and it looks like you may actually win benefits? What's the pitfall there?
The pitfall there is not properly identifying that you have that asset. When you put down in your bankruptcy all the things that you own, and that includes lawsuits, if you fail to identify the fact that that is something that you own and that it is of value, not only do you lose the right to pursue that claim, you essentially give that right to the trustee, period. Not only do you lose that right, you also are admitting in a court pleading that your claim of whatever sort, whether it is a personal injury claim, a wrongful death claim, a Social Security claim, whatever it is, you're admitting that you are not entitled to any money. That's called a judicial admission.
So if you're applying for Social Security disability and you file bankruptcy, and let's say you properly list it, am I correct in saying that if you were awarded benefits during the bankruptcy, that the money would go to the trustee and the trustee would use that money to pay your creditors instead of you getting the benefit of your disability claim?
That certainly is possible. In fact, it may be even likely.
You've been listening to the first part of a two-part interview with private attorney Jason Crumbine about the many pitfalls of filing a do-it-yourself bankruptcy. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 44, which deals with military and emergency laws. Did you know that the governor of Virginia can draft you? Under Code of Virginia Section 44.1, the militia of Virginia consists of all able-bodied residents of the Commonwealth who are U.S. citizens or who have declared their intention to become U.S. citizens,
who are at least 16 years of age and not more than 55 years of age. The militia consists of the National Guard, the Virginia Defense Force, the Naval Militia, and the Unorganized Militia. And under Code of Virginia 44-86, if the president orders out the National Guard, the governor can order out the unorganized militia. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral four, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. If your finances are bad enough so you need a bankruptcy, are your abilities good enough to file it on your own? Join us next week when private attorney and friend of the show, Jason Crumbine at Crumbine Consumer Legal Services, reveals the many pitfalls of filing a do-it-yourself bankruptcy in the second part of a two-part interview. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.